Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. It's Tuesday. My name is Mark Shiver, and we've got a big show for you today. So very excited to welcome once again to the program the Majority Leader of the North Carolina House of Representatives. That would be Representative John Bell. And we're also going to talk with Dr. Catherine Chu. She's formerly the president of Craven Community College, wrote a nice op-ed piece called "I'm an Educated Woman and I Backed Trump. Here's Why." We'll be talking to her about that a little later on in the program. But first of all, I want to thank you for listening. I want to encourage you to continue to tell the show, or tell your friends and family about the show, and join us on Twitter at What Matters NC and on Facebook, facebook.com/WhatMattersNC. Governor McCrory telling the State Board of Elections no in their request to hire additional lawyers for the hearing actually related to the Civitas action. So we'll be following that for you and probably have more information on that tomorrow as that moves forward. Attorney General Roy Cooper getting closer, 9,700 and change now, his vote total. So this all may be moot as far as recounts go if he crosses the 10,000 vote threshold. And I don't know, I guess a lot of people are probably ready for this to go away. Let's go ahead and decide who's going to be the governor and move on. So we'll keep you posted on all of that. Good news, some rain out west, not enough, but at least some of the rain has fallen to help in the wildfire situation. Tennessee now getting hit, Gatlinburg and Dollywood is at risk. And so pray for rain if you are given to pray, because those people need a good soaking to get those wildfires put out. Well, I'm going to step aside and we'll get right to it here on What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina the Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives, and that would be Representative John Bell. Welcome back, sir.
How are you doing today?
Doing great. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and I guess congratulations are in order in being elected by your colleagues to be the Majority Leader for the next session.
Well, I was honored when they decided to elect me on August the 30th, and I was even more honored that they felt I did a good enough job in that short tenure to elect me to a full term. But what I'm more than excited about was a lot of us that worked really, really hard to maintain the supermajority there in the House. We did lose three really good members, but we were able to maintain that supermajority, and that was a very big night for us.
Well, absolutely, it was, and you stole my thunder there, because that was going to be my first question. The last time we had you on the show, I had mentioned to you that a lot of speculation was swirling that you guys in the House might lose 8 or 9 seats as Republicans, and that the supermajority would be in question. And I remember very vividly you saying, well, we're going to work really hard, and apparently you did.
We did. Representative John Soka is our conference chair, and when Representative Jeter had to resign, he was in that position. Representative Soka jumped on board, and we put together a team and started working on this. And really, what we did was pretty simple. We started at zero, and worked our way up to 60, and then 65, and 70, and just trying to secure as many seats as we possibly could to do our best to maintain that supermajority. And we were able to raise enough funds to be able to do that, and the plan was successful. But what made that plan successful was we had some really good candidates, and we have some really good members that worked really hard in the districts that never gave up, regardless of what the polls were saying, regardless of what media outlets were saying. They believed in the cause, and they believed that if the people of North Carolina understood exactly what we've done over the last 6 years, that they would support us. And at the end of the day, they did just that.
Well, apparently that is the case. And I wanted to just take a step back, Representative Bell, and go back to election night and get your thoughts overall, not just for the North Carolina House, but kind of a broad brush overview. What were your thoughts at the end of the day when you saw that North Carolina went for Donald Trump, that Donald Trump won, that the General Assembly did as well as it did, that the Council of State did as well as they did? What were your thoughts about that?
Well, it, It was interesting because during the election cycle, you know, of course, I was traveling the state working with our members and campaigning for them, but I also had the opportunity to campaign for some good friends of mine. Senator Buck Newton, I attended a number of rallies with him in support of him, and was able to be with the governor, was able to be with the lieutenant governor. Was very blessed to have the opportunity to not only attend but also speak at some of the rallies that were held for now President-elect Trump and our Vice President-elect Governor Pence. What was happening on the ground was not what people were saying. And I was listening to the media outlets like everyone else was doing, but I was seeing, you know, 17,000 people showing up in Selma, over 13,000 people showing up in Kinston, over 7,000 people showing up in Kenansville to attend these events, these rallies. And then the phone calls I was getting of people that have never voted before, asking me how to go vote and where they needed to go. And then people that I thought were staunch Democrats, I would see them at Trump rallies, and I would see them starting to attend events. And so what was being said out in the media and the pollsters were missing that grassroots effort. And on election night, as I was watching results coming in, and I was watching the House members and watching the Senate members, ever since I got into the political world, I've been campaigning with Mike Causey, and to see him pull ahead and finally get that victory was exciting. Our lieutenant governor has one of the best grassroots efforts of any statewide candidate, and to see what he did, to see Senator Burr push forward, to see, of course, Donald Trump and Mike Pence win, and then to get later tonight, the look and see that we have a new superintendent of public instruction, the first time that seat's been held by a Republican in state history. These were huge wins for us. Mm-hmm. And then you take it a step further and look what's happened on some of the county commissioner levels and the appeals court, and we fell short on the Supreme Court. It was a good night. It was a good night for us. I was disappointed in some of the races I thought that we would do better in, but overall it was a very good night. And the excitement has continued. And that excitement now is building up, going into a long session, and also finally feeling like that we're going to have someone in Washington that will work with us and move this country forward.
Our guest is Representative John Bell. He is the House Majority Leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives, and we're talking about the election. And do you have any thoughts, not to put you too much on the spot here, but it seemed, I've asked a lot of people this, and I thought it would be good to get your opinion. It seems very odd that, as you mentioned, Donald Trump did so well in North Carolina, as did Lieutenant Governor Forrest, the House members, the Senate members, Council of State, June Atkinson, an entrenched Democrat bureaucrat for years, being unseated by Mark Johnson and the Department of Insurance commissioners changing parties there. And then here at the top of the ticket for the state, we have Governor McCrory struggling, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better for him. I kind of scratch my head, Representative Bell, and wonder what in the world happened there. Do you have any thoughts?
I've not sat down and broke down all the numbers and looked, and it's obvious that people, either of course voted for Roy Cooper or skipped that race. When you look at the total of votes that came in for the lieutenant governor and for Senator Burr and for Donald Trump, but something else happened there. That's been the Democrats' number one target all along, and I just find it very odd that the Council of State, our statewide races, did as well as they did, and for some reason that race didn't. And, I support Governor McCrory, continue to support Governor McCrory. I do think we have some issues with voter fraud, especially on the same-day registration and absentee ballot cases that need to be looked at. I thought it was very unusual that here it is, you've got the governor's race that was significantly, I wouldn't say significantly ahead, but pretty good ahead. And about 11:50, 12 o'clock, all of a sudden we have new ballots that just showed up out of Durham. It just something's not right with that.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we get to the bottom of it.
Well, it makes me scratch my head because, as you mentioned, he was comfortably ahead, and all of a sudden here comes Durham, which had given notice of some type of problems, and all of a sudden the totals changed. And so I agree with you, Representative Bell. I hope they can get to the bottom of it. You know what's funny, kind of going off topic just a little bit here, but the people on the left just throw out these, I call them idiotic accusations. For example, the Civitas Institute, as you may know, has filed an action to make sure that same-day voter registrations have been verified, which I think makes common sense. If you registered during early voting, for example, the last day of early voting was the Friday before the election, well, there's no way logistically that your registration could be verified. And everybody else that registers, you know, their registration has to be verified. So it's not like Civitas is saying, oh, we want to disenfranchise people. We just want to make sure, you know, they go through the process that everybody else did. And yet the left is out here just screaming that, you know, voter disenfranchisement and trying to not count votes. And it just really is amazing some of the things, Representative Bell, that the people on the left will come out with when, you know, people are trying to make reasonable, processes and make sure everything's okay.
Well, I just go back and look when we were 2 years ago, when I sat in that chamber and proudly supported for our election reform bill, which supported voter ID, which an overwhelming majority of North Carolinians agree with.
Yep.
And even at the election when I was working the polls, it was amazing the people that were walking in with their ID in their hand. You have an ID for everything.
Yeah.
If you have a package too big for your post office box, you have to show an ID that justifies you to get the mail. But yet we don't have that same standard in voting now. I look at the provisions that were put in place to secure our elections, and when you look at what happened in the primary, it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
We did not have these issues. And then you move forward, and the attempts that were made by a radical justice on the Fourth Circuit Court to roll these provisions back, and now we've got all these different problems.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you can disenfranchise somebody by just justifying who they are. You have to show credentials and ID to get into the Democrat convention, but yet you don't have to show an ID to vote in the state of North Carolina. We've got some issues there, but of course now I guess we see why those things were done, and there's no one that can convince me any other way than it was a political agenda to try to push Hillary Clinton across the line here in North Carolina, and that's why the courts rolled this back. I think everything was perfectly timed and aligned to get this done, set up for the election, and I hope that Governor McCrory and Civitas and other organizations and people will stand their ground and say, look, we need to have these questions answered. We need to have election reform here in North Carolina, and we need to be able to say that our vote is secure and that one person equals one vote.
Well, I think that makes perfect sense to me, Representative Bell, and I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Just, you know, you're right. People support voter ID, and people want to know that there's integrity surrounding their elections, but we'll have to wait and see how all of this plays out. Changing topics just a minute, I'm looking at an article online that says top legislative budget and tax writers say that the General Assembly is not likely to tackle more extensive tax reform next year. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that because, to review, you in the General Assembly have done quite a bit already. And so is the thinking at this point to kind of let things settle out and play out, for example, the zero tax bracket, raising the standard deduction, will be coming into year two of that, and the teacher pay raises will be phasing in. And so what do you see there in terms of tax reform? Anything that we should be looking for, or maybe just letting the dust settle on what's already been done?
Well, one of the things that I did is at our caucus meeting, the first caucus meeting we had of the new election year, is I asked every member in our caucus to write down at least five issues that they thought that we should tackle here in the state of North Carolina moving into the long session. And of course, tax reform was one of those issues that came up consistently across the board.
Wow.
We're going to have members that you know, want to move forward, and we're going to have some members that want to take a step back and just like you said, let the dust settle and see what we've done. What I think at the end of the day is going to happen is it will be reviewed. We're going to look, and I know this is, you're going to find this very hard to believe, but we don't get everything right. so we have to take a step back and look and see what's working and what's not working. What's also working with businesses and what's, you know, some things look really good on paper, but when you start applying those rules and regulations that are put in place with the tax form, they become very confusing, and we've had that happen. And so we need to take a step back and look at those. We need to make sure that we're still on track to hit those goals and those triggers that will lower the corporate tax and the state income tax that were put in place a number of years ago. What I would like to see happen is a responsible approach to that. Let's make sure all the loose ends are tied up. Let's make sure we've done what we need to do. Let's make sure businesses continue growing. And then once we feel comfortable with the reforms we put in place, then we move forward on other reforms down the line. I think in this upcoming session, I think you'll probably see a little combination of both, but I don't think there'll be any aggressive movement on tax reform, because the last 4 years we have done a tremendous amount in North Carolina with tax reform, and it shows moving from the 44th worst tax climate to, I believe, now the 11th best tax climate in the country. You know, those are really aggressive moves that's happened in a very short period of time, and we want to make sure we've done the right things.
Well, it certainly sounds like a good plan going forward, but as the majority leader now looking out over a long session, this is going to be a new experience for you. What do you hope to accomplish as a majority leader?
Well, the first thing is unity. You know, if the election holds out today, the way it stands, we're going to have 74 Republican members in the House. We'll have 36 Republican members in the Senate. We'll have a Republican lieutenant governor, and we'll be working with a Democrat governor. So it's very important for our caucus to stay unified and to make sure we're doing the people's work. The people sent us back there for another 2 years. We've got some issues that we're going to have to tackle, one being redistricting. If that holds out in the court cases, we're going to be dealing with that. We've also got to take a look at our election laws and learn from some of the issues that we're experiencing right now. But the main thing is from our caucus standpoint, what I would like to see happen is that before our members file any legislation, that we hold ourselves to a standard. And when a piece of legislation is filed, I like for it to, you know, one, does it retain business and industry here in the state of North Carolina? Number two, does it put more dollars in the pockets of North Carolina citizens? And number three, does it make lives better for North Carolina families and individuals? And I think if we can answer yes to all three of those questions, that we can put forth an agenda that will be a pro-business, a pro-growth, and a pro-family agenda for the state of North Carolina, which is exactly what they've directed us to do. And that's why I would like to see us move forward. And if we're unified and have a clear directive with those principles in mind, we will have a very successful long session.
You know, forgive me for going back to this, but as you were talking about people sending you to Raleigh to do certain things and that's your intention, I was thinking back to what I asked you about the governor and what your thoughts were there about the challenges that he's facing. And it occurred to me, Representative Bell, that, you know, House Bill 2 was kind of a lightning rod, but at the same time, it really didn't affect the results in the General Assembly. And so I don't think that was something that can be pointed to as a surefire, you know, reason that Governor McCrory has struggled in trying to get reelected. I think the people overwhelmingly voted to keep the Republicans in the majority in the General Assembly. And that includes an understanding that it was the General Assembly that passed House Bill 2. And so I think that people feel like you're doing a good job.
Well, I think people feel like we're doing a good job. You know, House Bill 2 had a really nice media spin put on it. And they tried to take, in my opinion, what was common sense legislation and turn it into an election narrative of discrimination, which was completely untrue. I think it was the right thing to do, and it was done for the right reasons with the right intent. There's never been a perfect piece of legislation. There'll never be a perfect piece of legislation. But House Bill 2 was put in place to protect our women and children and to protect people when they have, well, in the privacy with bathroom facilities. That's what it was done. It was put in place to stop a complete overreach of unconstitutional overreach from the city of Charlotte.
Yeah.
They had an opportunity to work with us. They did try. You know, they made promises. And you know, at the end of the day, the citizens of North Carolina said, look, you know, we don't want grown men running around in little girls' restrooms in shower facilities. We don't want that. I always thought that was common sense.
I never thought
in a million years we'd have to do legislation that said that.
Yeah.
But you know, we face some challenges in some of our districts, especially in our metropolitan areas, when Representative Pendleton and Representative Abla and Representative Rob Bryan, you know, House Bill 2 was an issue with them, but it wasn't the issue. I look at in Mecklenburg County, I think there was more emphasis put on the I-77 tolling issue than there was House Bill 2.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so you know, House Bill 2, I'm sure, is going to be in the topic of conversation because it sells newspapers and radio ads and TV time. But I think the majority of North Carolinians said, you know what, this was done with the right intent for the right reasons, and there's bigger issues out there, such as growing our economy, bringing in business and industry here in the state, making sure our education system is moving in the right direction, making sure our students are prepared to join the working force. Those type of things were a whole lot more important than the so-called bathroom bill.
Absolutely. Our guest, Representative John Bell, and as we come to the end of our time here, I wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions. With Hurricane Matthew now being a memory for a lot of the state, but a still very difficult reality for the folks in the eastern part of the state, what's the latest, if you can share with our listeners, on a special session to allocate the money from the Rainy Day Fund to help those folks? We're running out of time here, actually about a month left in the year. Do you see that happening, or it'll be held over until the long session?
You know, we've had I've actually had a number of conversations with our state budget chair, state budget director on this issue to make sure that we have the funding we need to get us through the end of the year. And I would think if we were just dealing with Hurricane Matthew that we would probably, the governor would have already called a special session, but now we're dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew here in eastern North Carolina, but now we're dealing with the forest fires in western North Carolina,
yeah,
which is kind of complicated some issues. So I don't see how you do a special session for one and then have to come back and address another one when we can get all the damage assessments in place, because we're still having some damage assessments here with crop damage and business damage here in eastern North Carolina. I mean, this is something that we're still it's not over with. I was in Kinston this weekend and was at the new sports shop, which had a great plan put in place. And the day the water receded, 7 days later, they were open for business.
Wow.
We still have a number of businesses on that Highway 70 strip there that may not ever open, and some that are still struggling to get open. And we also have infrastructure damage. There are still many places in the east that the roads are completely closed because there's no road there anymore. So we do have the funds in place to be able to address those concerns at this point in time. Now you complicate that issue with what we're dealing with in the western part of the state with the fires. And I would think it would be, in my opinion, this is just John Bell speaking, as a legislator and as a taxpayer, I would want the General Assembly to come in and take a comprehensive look at both the natural disasters that we have and address them at one time, instead of trying to piecemeal it together.
Yeah. No, I think that makes perfect sense. So we'll look forward to that. And I know that the people have been affected. This fire thing is really out of control. It's in Tennessee now, and they're talking about Gatlinburg and Dollywood and all this stuff being at risk. So definitely some stuff for you guys to pay attention to in the western part of the state.
I did get some good news today. I was actually looking online in our Representative-elect Kevin Corbin out in the western part of the state, which is taking over for our retired longtime legislator, Representative Roger West, took a picture of rain on his windshield.
Uh-oh.
It was a welcome sign in western North Carolina.
Absolutely.
So hopefully the good Lord will bless us with some rain in the western part of the state. We've had enough here in the east, but hopefully we can get some in the western part of the state, and these fires will be snuffed out.
One last question, Representative John Bell, and I've saved the toughest one possibly for last. If, in fact, it turns out that the election is declared for Roy Cooper, you will find yourself as a General Assembly dealing with the Democrat governor. What are your thoughts about that possibility? How do you think that dynamic will play out?
Well, I was elected to represent all the citizens of House District 10, and serving in a leadership position is my job to represent the Republican majority in the House. If the election is what it is today, and we're looking at Governor Cooper, I will work with him the best way we possibly can, without compromising our caucus agenda and the job that the citizens sent us up there to do. And that is the way government's supposed to work. Of course, at the end of the day, I would rather be working with Governor McCrory, which we have for the last 4 years. But we will continue to move forward with the agenda that our caucus is setting forward. We'll continue to move forward with the work of the citizens of North Carolina, and we'll find ways to work together. And there's going to be some things that we can work on together. There's going to be some things we're not working on together. But we'll handle those at that time.
Well, it sounds like a plan, Representative John Bell. It's always a pleasure. You're very well-spoken. You're very passionate about serving the people of our state and serving in a leadership position in the House. And we appreciate always your time. Thank you for being our guest once again here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, and look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Great. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is Dr. Catherine Chu, and she is formerly the president of Craven Community College, and she's now a consultant with Yellow Cape Communications in Charlotte, and most recently the author of a viewpoint opinion piece in the Charlotte Observer on November 26th entitled, "I'm an Educated Woman and I Backed Trump, Here's Why." Dr. Chu, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I thought that your piece was very well written, obviously, and very informative and insightful. And so the first line caught my eye. I was a closet Donald Trump supporter. And before we get into why you supported him, why did you feel the need to be a closet supporter, so to speak?
Well, I think, Mark, I'm not alone. In fact, this experience since writing this article have been shocked at sort of the response. It has definitely touched a chord. And part of me now knows even more why people wanted to keep it hidden, because the reaction by some is so visceral and so mean-spirited. So I'll tell you why I wrote it. I really was very concerned after the election and when we saw, the demonstrations and the reaction to this. And I was having lunch with a new friend. I just have moved to Charlotte. I've only been here about a year. And we were having lunch, and I didn't know her that well, and she revealed to me that she had voted for Trump. And I was surprised because I think the stereotype of who are Trump voters is in everyone's mind. And I came home after lunch that day and I thought, I just want to write about this because I want to create a better understanding. This is not about just blue-collar workers who are uneducated. And just because someone lacks a formal education doesn't mean they're not intelligent or smart and can't make good decisions. But my decision was a thoughtful one, and it's not something we should be ashamed of or felt to be ashamed of. So I think there are too many people that have had to hide it, and I understand more now even why, based on the feedback from the article I wrote.
So is that to mean that people have been ugly to you and not very nice?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, what's out on the public venue on the website of the Charlotte Observer, I would say, is as of last night, was primarily negative. But yesterday, I received so many forms of outreach. They had gone through the company webpage and had found me, and I got lots of positive feedback, again, quietly, not out there on the web for everyone to see, who wrote to me personally. It was really heartwarming. In fact, I just got an email this morning from a gentleman in Florida who, it just brought tears to my eyes. He said, thank you for writing this.
Wow.
You know, there are intelligent people in the world or in the United States that love this country and made this decision based on good reasons.
Well,
so anyway,
yeah, no, absolutely.
I'm really shocked at, I guess this is where social media and the new platforms truly, you know, put the word out there.
Well, the interesting thing, as you know, about social media is that people can write whatever they want to and hide behind the anonymity of that. And yet I'm looking now at the website, and there are some positive responses that are out there. And I think that you make a very good point, however, in your piece that, you know, as we have analyzed the election, particularly in the Rust Belt states of Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio, and those, we're looking at blue-collar, male, working-class individuals that people are crediting for giving Trump such a, you know, electoral victory,
right,
of large proportions. And yet you're making the point that, you know, you're educated, you're a former community college president, you have a multicultural family situation going on, and
right,
you supported him. And so there is a lot more to his base of support than just, you know, working class males.
Absolutely. And that was part of my rationale, too. I've been, you know, throughout this campaign, watched it very closely. I'm not a historian. That's not my discipline, but I am a, you know, a concerned citizen. And one of the things that made me so angry was the media coverage of this and the distorted view. And, you know, it just brings it home how we have to teach information literacy and how we have to help students and the broader community be more critical and use critical thinking skills and not listen to all the sound bites, because it's truly amazing the way this election was framed, and you can understand why people view it one way if their sources are limited.
Yeah.
And they're listening to sound bites on, you know, network news.
Well,
it's incredible. And, you know, I'll go back, Mark. You know, I have, and as I said in the article, I'm unaffiliated, as they describe you in North Carolina. I'm an independent. I have voted Democratic. I have voted Republican. But I will tell you, when I became president at Craven in 2008, at the exact downturn of the economy, you know, we faced an unbelievable challenges. The whole state did. The whole nation did. I was invited to visit a class. We had Hatteras Yachts was a major employer in our area. And Hatteras, you know, makes luxury boats and yachts.
Right.
And they had laid off, I don't know how many people, but a huge number of people. And one of my directors of continuing ed and workforce development said, Dr. Chu, would you come over and speak to the students? And I went over to the class. And Mark, when I walked back to my office that day, you know, as a leader, and I'm a student of leadership, I look at what leaders do and their styles, the choices they make. I walked back to my office that day, and I had felt so bad because we had had travel restrictions, we had had salary freezes, et cetera, et cetera, and I felt bad for our team, I felt bad for my colleagues. But I walked back to my office that day, and I said, you know what? We don't need to feel sorry for ourselves. We all have a job. I looked in the faces of those people at Hatteras Yachts, and they were 50-year-olds who had not done anything other than this job their entire life, and they had no job. They were back to be retrained to figure out what were they going to do at age 50 now that their whole world had been destroyed. So when you look in the eyes of those people and you see what people have faced in this horrendous economy since 2008, what has our growth been at max 2.1%? It's terrible. And so when I said in my article, my two priorities and my reasons for voting for Trump had to do with the economy and jobs, because if people feel good about themselves and they have the means to empower themselves and their families, things are going to be better. And we have to feel safe and we have to feel secure. So I'm going on and on here.
No, but please do. That's very well spoken.
Well, I have deep feelings about that. And I said in my article, I do not agree with many of the policies of the Republicans, Trump, policies in terms of gun control, climate control, the things I put in my article. But to me, those two fundamental points, safety and security, jobs in the economy, if we get that right, we'll work on the other things. But those are the fundamentals that we've got to get right.
Absolutely.
And this administration, and I blame the executive branch and the legislative branch, we need change. And that's why I was thinking about Trump, but I was also thinking about Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders' contingent was very much in some ways similar to the Trump supporters in that we need to blow up the system. We need to do something radically different.
Yeah.
Because more of the same is not going to be the solution.
Well, I think that you have tapped into a sentiment that was felt by many Americans. And what was interesting to me, and our guest on What Matters in North Carolina is Dr. Catherine Chu, who wrote a piece in the Charlotte Observer about being an educated woman and why she voted for Donald Trump. But during the Republican primary, Dr. Chu, there was this wave of discontent that you're describing that was visible. The people who helped Donald Trump just basically, mow down every opponent that he faced in the Republican primary were very vocal in their discontent and the fact that they were tired of the establishment, so to speak. And he rode that, obviously, to becoming the party's nominee. And what I was intrigued with and talked to many pundits about on this program during the campaign was that it didn't seem as if he were tapping into that sentiment horizontally, in other words, across the country. And yet that's the exact same sentiment that you have just described now that was very much a part of your decision to vote for Donald Trump. So I find that fascinating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, Mark, it's interesting because I always watch Squawk Box in the morning, the business news. And I kept thinking, why are there not more guests on Squawk Box? Because Trump is a business person and he's got, a pro-growth philosophy and orientation. Why are not more people being featured on the show? And I was watching not too long ago and they were saying after the election, we couldn't get business people to come on. We couldn't get people to come on to the show to talk about it. So, when you think about how many prominent business leaders, and I've gotten responses from some personally, too, that they voted. But the real essence is, why do we have to hide? Why do you have to be afraid or fearful of saying that, I think this person's got some good ideas. I don't agree with everything, but I think this person's going to do something good for this country. Why is there fear associated with that? Why do you have to be in the closet? No different than a gay person who says, you know, I can't come out because of retribution and, you know, what the way I'm going to be treated in society. This is not different than that in many ways. Why do I have to be afraid to say I support Trump? That doesn't make me a racist. It doesn't make me xenophobic. It doesn't make me all those awful names that the other side of the story wants to present it.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and yet there are some who, and I've found, just kind of going off topic here, but my personal experience with particularly social media is that those on the left tend to be much more given to name-calling and just unkind rhetoric than conservatives. And I think that that's a lot of what we're seeing now in their response to Trump having won. And it really is disconcerting that, you know, for example, here in North Carolina, Governor McCrory is trying to fight for his political life. But I don't hear, you know, vicissitudes of hate coming out of those who support him. But yet, those who supported Hillary Clinton, I think, are much more demonstrative, at least verbally, in their disdain and willingness to use, you know, hateful language against those who did support Trump.
I agree with you completely. And I wouldn't have said that, what, 5 months ago or 10 months ago. I mean, someone tweeted about my article and said to me that I was a moron.
Wow.
You know, you can't put in an article of 500 words everything that you've thought about and who you are as the essence of who you are as a person. But I'm not a moron. You know, that level of mean-spiritedness, I agree with you. I think my observation is that does come from the left side of the equation. And I wouldn't have said that before. I didn't totally understand it, but that is what has come out of this election process. My gosh, the standards on one side versus the other was just amazing to me.
Well,
I mean, just think about this now with the recount, and they're talking about, you know, Jill Stein doing the recount in Wisconsin, and how ridiculous is that, the waste of money, et cetera, et cetera. But look at what was made out of the last debate when Trump said, I'm going to wait. You know, I'm not going to commit to that until I see and, you know, what the outcome is.
Yeah.
Oh, that was like the most dramatic thing. He's not respecting the Constitution. It's ridiculous. But
yeah.
Who's saying that now?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Dr. Chu, one thing I wanted to get your opinion on, and I hope this doesn't put you too much on the spot, but I felt that people of faith were facing a real dilemma with, on the one side, here's Hillary that most evangelicals would not support because of her stance, particularly on partial birth abortion. And yet we all saw the video with Donald Trump and Billy Bush and Trump saying things that were can only be described as horrendous and horrible. And so if you were an evangelical, here you are, you know, you can't vote for Hillary, but now, you know, you've got this moral dilemma. Do I vote for somebody who has said these horrible things? So transferring that template over to women, I'm sure that women were also faced with a similar dilemma, maybe not so much the abortion part of that, but how do you support Donald Trump after those horrible things that he said?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know friends have asked me that, and that's hard. I don't condone that. I don't think anyone did condone what we saw. It was awful,
yeah.
You know, hearing those comments and what was said. And that is a hard thing to reconcile. But I would just say that, and I'm not excusing that, and I don't condone it. And as a woman, I'm 64 years old. So from my generation, the way women have been treated, the experiences I've had in my lifetime, and many, many other women have had not good experiences with you know, advances inappropriate comments, et cetera. I don't condone that, but I'm also not a single-issue voter. I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton just because she's a woman.
Yeah.
So I go back to my original, you know, thoughts and the fundamentals. We have to get those things right, and then we'll deal with the rest. I don't excuse him for that, and I don't condone that, but that wasn't my most important issue.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I don't care about it. That doesn't mean that I think what was done, you know, wasn't awful. It was awful. But I'm not voting for Donald Trump because of one issue. I'm voting for him for the two most important issues that I think are going to be mean the most to this nation and to our young people, to our senior citizens, to all Americans.
Our guest is Dr. Catherine Chu, and she has written a piece on November 26th that appeared in the Charlotte Observer. Of course, she's a former president of Craven Community College and working as a consultant with Yellow Cape Communications in Charlotte. I'm an educated woman, and I backed Trump. Here's why. Excellent piece. And one thing I want to go back to, because I think you made an incredibly salient point. In the primary, Bernie Sanders had a message. Now, I'm a conservative. I didn't agree with his message that we should look to socialism as answers and all of that. But he did appeal to a lot of voters, obviously, as he, you know, put up a good fight against Hillary in the primary. But he had a message. Donald Trump had a message. Let's make America great again. I never really heard a message from Hillary Clinton. And I'm not sure what she was really running on, except maybe perhaps experience in the system, which a lot of people, as you know, that was not appealing at all and led to Trump's victory in many ways. But did you ever feel like you got a message from Hillary that this is what she was, you know, was all about, or was it just empty?
No, I think that what I saw through the primary process was, and I will tell you, I have Hillary's book, Tough Choices, or Hard Choices, beside my bed. I have Obama book. I have a number of books from, you know, a variety of sources. But if you look at that book as an example, in her book, she talked about the TTP being the gold standard, and she was very much in support of it. What I saw Hillary do, and as she had to compete with Sanders, is I saw a woman who didn't stand firm on what she believed. She changed with the wind, the political wind, and that became more and more apparent to me as time went on. And, you know, Bernie Sanders, I'm with you. I didn't agree with his more socialistic policies and mindset, but I think what resonated with me with Bernie Sanders and was what resonated, I think, with me and others with Trump. Sanders was genuine. Sanders was authentic.
Yeah.
It was like listening to a college professor when he spoke, and he did have a clear message. But, I mean, imagine all of these young people are gravitating to a 70-plus-year-old man. He was like the quintessential university professor, in my view.
Yeah.
He explained things, and he was real, and he was authentic. I think Hillary Clinton came across as not genuine, not real. She changed with depending on what the political winds were at the time. And so when you look at Trump, totally different style, abrasive, you know, brash, you know, impolite, et cetera. But it was genuine. He was real. He said what he thought. And there's something about that that's so appealing to people.
Well, I think you're right. Absolutely. So in terms of the bottom line, you talked about several different things, but What do you expect now? The Republicans are in control in the Senate and in the House. The Republican president, this is the first time in a while that one party has had all three pieces of the puzzle, so to speak. What are you looking forward to now? What are you expecting to see from a President Trump that you have come out of the closet and admitted that you voted for?
Well, I'm expecting action. I think that's what people want. I think we've had such a stalemate, such inertia between the executive and legislative branch in Washington for so many years. People want action. Let's address the problems that are pervasive in our society and the world at large. And so I think he does have a can-do attitude. He is going to get it done. He is a builder. Is it going to be easy? No. But thank God we have both houses, the House and the Senate. That doesn't mean he's going to get everything through that he wants. But, I mean, I think we've been given a gift of time with all three House, Senate, and the executive branch in somewhat alignment. And we have a can-do, action-oriented person who is going to be leading the charge. And I think he's going to surround himself with good people. I mean, I'm watching, you know, this election process, and I think it's ridiculous. This is our mindset in this technological society that we're in. The election has only been finalized for what, 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks? But he's supposed to have his cabinet picked already.
Yeah.
You know, we want instantaneous gratification, instantaneous answers. This needs to be thoughtful. He's doing that. He's interviewing people. Give it time. Give it a chance. This is not a lot of time. I think the process he's using is excellent. And I think it's wonderful in many ways that he's using YouTube to go directly to the people with his message. I mean, think about it. I heard someone say, you know, Roosevelt, during his period of time, used the radio to reach his constituencies in a way that had never been done before.
Right.
Kennedy used TV. Obama used the internet. Now Trump is moving to use YouTube. He doesn't have to go through the biased media. I can listen to him directly. So I think, you know, he's using contemporary means in a positive way, and everybody's talking about that, or lots of people are saying, oh, that's just not presidential.
Yeah.
Really? It's a contemporary means of reaching the public. What is wrong with that?
Well, I think that one of the things, and I know we've been talking for quite some time, I need to let you go, but one of the things that was interesting about, I don't know if you recall this or not, but in 2008, when then Senator Obama was campaigning to be president, his campaign was on the leading edge, light years ahead of the Republicans in terms of using the internet and text messaging and social media in its beginning stages. And so I don't have a problem at all with the president. Of course, I think some of his tweets are a little crazy sometimes, but
he might
need to rein that in once he takes the oath of office a little bit. But
I would agree.
One last question. Can I just completely go off topic here? What are your thoughts about North Carolina? North Carolina supported Trump, supported the General Assembly in overwhelming fashion. There were people on the Council of State, for example, the Department of Public Instruction, insurance commissioner that had never been Republican, or at least not in decades, are now seats that will be held by Republicans. And yet at the top of the ticket, here's Governor McCrory struggling. Even Senator Burr pulled away and won his reelection bid pretty handily. The lieutenant governor won his reelection bid pretty handily. Do you have a thought or an opinion, just And if you'd rather not say, that's fine. But just off the cuff, what do you see there? Because you seem pretty smart and have good intuition about this sort of thing. Why did the governor struggle?
Well, you know, to me and living in Charlotte, I'm in the heartbeat of the HB2 controversy. And I think that is a huge issue. I think that was a mistake in terms of what the legislature did and the way in which that was handled in terms of process. You know, middle of the night, sign this quickly. And I just think that was a poor way of doing business, and it came back to bite them. From an economic development standpoint, I think it has been so damaging.
One of the
on
things...
The flip side,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
On the flip side, I mean, these are tough issues. These are not black and white issues. There's a lot of gray in all of this. I can also see people's perspective in terms of, safety, in terms of the bathroom and who's allowed to go in the bathroom and the privacy issues and that kind of thing. But in terms of taking away the right to for non-discrimination, being able to, have a say at the local level about what you want to do or not do, I do think that the state legislature overreached. And I think that they are paying a price for that. The state has, unfortunately. So I think the process was bad. I think there needed to be greater debate and discussion about the issue. And I think that it had a huge impact on how people felt about the governor's race. And clearly the state is very divided, like many states, between the urban centers and the rural parts of the state. You know, if you're in eastern North Carolina, there's a different viewpoint than if you live in the mountains.
Yeah.
Versus if you live in Cary and UNC Chapel Hill.
Yeah. Well, always good to get various perspectives. In Charlotte, I was expecting you to say that it was the toll roads, because there were a lot of people that have blamed that situation more than the House Bill 2, particularly in light of the General Assembly doing so well. But I know the toll roads have also been a very
divisive thing too.
Yeah,
I don't know. We need a road on 77. That's what I know driving through there.
Yeah, exactly.
whether it's a toll road or a regular road, it definitely needs to be built. But I'm sure that was a big part of it too.
Well, Dr. Catherine Chu, your piece was excellent, and your interview is excellent, and I am so glad I reached out to you and that you agreed to be our guest. And thank you very much for joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mark, for trying to bring awareness to the public, and I appreciate that you invited me. Thanks so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was certainly a fascinating interview with Dr. Catherine Chu, and we might disagree about the House Bill 2 thing. I really don't think that hurt Governor McCrory as much as she might have said, because the General Assembly did not seem to have any consequences from that at all. I think it was more the toll roads, and we've discussed that. But nevertheless, her article is fascinating, and her interview was excellent, very articulate, and I'm glad I've made a new friend here on What Matters in North Carolina, because she was an outstanding guest, and I hope that you enjoyed the interview with her as much as I did. We will be back tomorrow, of course, with another big edition of What Matters in North Carolina, and we'll be looking forward to chatting with you then. Remember, tell your friends and family about the show. Find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores, and also at freedomactionnetwork.com. Until tomorrow, hope you have a great rest of the day. Bye.